Thank you. There are books up here if you didn't get one. They're shrink-wrapped, but if you'd like one. Does your child's world scare you? Or your grandchild's world scare you? It works. I'm hawking books if anybody wants to buy one. But last week we talked, we had the introduction, we talked some about, among other things, we talked about how family life might have changed, about some of the ways that we can look at potentially helping. And in the handout from last week, we talked about the top or things that we can do, be a parent, not a friend, as they're growing up, or a grandparent. I'll be your friend when you're 30, but I'm the parent of the grandparent now. Communicate with children. Give them their full attention when they speak. Acknowledge their presence around you. Teach the value of hard work. Celebrate successes, but don't reward mediocrity. Especially when there's hard work involved. Work for justice and do acts of kindness. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, not how a lot of folks do unto others before others do unto you kind of thing. Don't keep children in an ivory tower. Help them to learn the realities of life as those things are appropriate. Be a family of faith together and a faithful mentor for children. That was from last week, too. Gave a lot of stats, and you asked a question last week about Greenville County stats, Francis. I did a little checking on that, and especially in the area of child abuse. We were talking about single-parent families and child care and latchkey children, how many come home and spend hours alone, which leads to all kinds of violence. Over 3 million reports occur annually in the United States. In 2009, 3.3 million cases of child abuse were reported involving some 6 million children. There's currently, in 2010, a report of child abuse every 10 seconds in the United States. More than 5 children die every day because of child abuse. But you were asking about some of the other other things. Let's see. In Greenville County, and this will go into, but sexual violence against children in South Carolina increased 37.5% from 1995 to 2005. Greenville County had the most acts of sexual violence against children in all of South Carolina. 372 in 2005 that were reported. 33% of all offenders in South Carolina are under 16 years old. A third of all those who are offending, who are abusing children, are under 16 years old. That's on the increase. Let's see. In South Carolina, male offenders are of sexual abuse, 94.6% of all sexual abuse offenders, the ones who perpetrate the act, are male. 79.8% of those are the female is a victim of the male, and 15% are male to male. When it comes to, once again, South Carolina, not just everybody but South Carolina. The victim, 31.8% of the victims were victimized by families, members, and 57.6% were other acquaintances within you, which is almost kind of nationwide. And 41% of those by family were by a parent or a step. The peak times for sexual abuse among children and adolescents in a study done 1999 through 2005 nationwide, other than late at night, were between 8 and 9 a.m. and 3 and 4 p.m. during the week. as children are on their way or preparing for school, and when they come home after school. Scary kinds of things. Abuse occurs at every socioeconomic level. All ethnicities. Within all religions and all levels of education. Nearly two-thirds of child maltreatment cases involve substance use by the person who maltreats them. Abused children are 25% more likely to experience teen pregnancy, 59% more likely to be arrested as a juvenile, 28% more likely to be arrested as an adult, and 30% more likely to commit a violent crime as an adolescent or an adult. Estimates, depending on reports, one-half to two-thirds of all people in treatment for drug abuse had been abused or neglected when they were children. And we're talking about maltreatment, neglect as well. So it is an epidemic that leads to all kinds of things and violence. So what are some of the things we can do, especially when it comes to divorce, single parenting, latchkey kids, and child care? We'll talk more about violence as it goes along. But what are some of the things that we can do? I'm going to get up off the floor so my shoes don't get messed up. That's right. It's here. It's all around us. So what are things that we can do? What are things we can do when it comes to divorce and single parenting? Okay. Counseling. I have often said we should have a sign up, and y'all have heard me say this. Before a wedding, sign over the door, it says adults only. That is only, you should take it as an adult, and it's not a game. The number of folks that do not go through any kind of premarital counseling is phenomenal. So premarital counseling, or counseling when there are difficulties in marriages. Trying to keep marriages together more. What can we do as individuals? Same thing as this church. Counseling. Maybe even workshops. How about marriage retreats? They might help. Of course, and again, they could drive a wedge. You know, some of the things that people talk about or get asked. But try to work through things together, keeping marriages together and more traditional. We talked about the number of single parent homes last time. We talked about non-traditional marriages, and I think there are, six or eight states now that are even now legalizing same-sex unions. Try to work through the problems, if at all possible, individually, as well as in counseling. Right.
And so therefore, they lose a lot of your attention and your love if you're not sure.
Well, that's very true. If they feel left out and pushed off to the side, et cetera.
Not only that, if you have one kid that sells a sport, and you're a sports fan person, and the others don't, you have a tendency.
Right.
It shows more attention than one than the
other. Oh, trust me. I had a student. And this is one of those times, confession, and maybe this is good or not. Unfortunate thing is he died a couple of years ago, I think. But there was a student when I was teaching at North Greenville that he was rather effeminate. Always sickly. had major kidney issues and other things. And one year, all of a sudden, I started getting telephone calls anywhere from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock at night that would go 20, 30, 45 minutes wanting to know why he shouldn't kill himself. He sees these things on TV and all these people that are starving. Why is he still alive, etc.? And it got to the point after several weeks, and I tried to get him in touch with other folks, and nope, that there were times if the phone rang at 10 o'clock at night, I walked out the door and said to Mary, I'm going to walk around the block. I'm not here. And it was him. It was, and it went on for months, but it was him. And I, you know, just, but he had a brother that was the All-American boy, lifeguard, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, excelled at all sports, and this was very emaciated and et cetera. Come to find out later on when finally did get him to agree to some counseling, and it took a long time. I kept telling him, I can't help you anymore. But he'd still call and didn't want counseling. When we finally got him, and come to find out that that was a big issue. His mother doted on him. His father doted on the other child. His father and he could not communicate, but it just so happens, and later I saw a picture of his father, and unfortunately for him, even with a beard, and I had a beard at the same time, he looked a lot like me. Same hair coloring and all that kind of stuff, and his voice sounded very much like mine on the phone. And so there was that transfer of the parent that he didn't have. And so, you know, so that was the situation that, and it really got kind of scary because I had two young boys. And he knew where we lived. And he knew where they went to school. Yeah, so you kind of have to watch those things. But what you're talking about with paying more attention to another, et cetera, that's the kind of situation that happened. And it's difficult. We who have children have grandchildren or friends that have children, you can see where sometimes different ones seem to get a little more attention in this area than another. And if we can see it, you better believe the children can understand it and see it. And, you know, so that's very, very difficult. Encourage or offer help or assistance to single parent families. For example, one thing that could be done, whether it's by us, by an individual, offer opportunities to mentor, in particular, mentor the single parent. Make connections with the single parent. Especially so that they know there's somebody that will mentor them, talk with them, they can call and talk with. Now, you need to set limits as to when and how long, but setting some limits to talk with them. Maybe some folks have even talked about adopting single families and helping single-parent families. And even on occasion, somebody will take the children somewhere, and this has happened even with not divorced and single parent, but with married couples that are having some stresses and difficulties, folks will take their children and take them off with their own to do something so that they can have some time to work through, to go through counseling or work through issues, things that can do there, which if the parents have less stress in that area, it's less likely to be taken out on the children. Offer safety and help for latchkey children. Mentioned briefly last time, there's some places where people will volunteer with certain families or with a school or a church, will volunteer to be grandparents on call. Where child gets home, they're scared, they're not sure what's going on, they can call. If they can't call the parent, they can call this person who has been introduced to them, who the family knows, etc., they can call them and talk with them on the telephone. Help them to calm down. That can be something that an individual can do. Or perhaps with latchkey children, there are different places. There are churches, there are community centers, there are others who have after-school programs or story hours. Another thing, though, that we can do with children, especially those who are experiencing perhaps some frustration and being scared whether they're in a single parent or divorce situation, or they have to come home and spend 2 or 3 or 4 hours alone by themselves in the afternoon. is to offer encouragement. Gentle, when they do something wrong, correct them gently, but teach them about the things they need to do or prepare them to handle different situations when they have to be home alone. Yeah. Teach them how to call 911 when they say, but there's not an 11 on the phone. Teach them how to, you know, things to stay away from. Another thing is to make sure, and perhaps we can help to tell folks, make sure that if their children do have to be at home alone, there is somebody that checks on them, and if they haven't heard from them within X number of minutes after they should be there, there's somebody who can go over and check on them. Make sure that they put make the home as safe and secure as possible so that the children don't get into things they shouldn't. And build confidence. Praise them when they're doing things that are right and good. But also listen to what the child says. When they give their point of view, don't just kind of slough it off, you know, oh, you're just a scaredy cat kind of thing. Or if you were tougher, da-da-da-da-da. And the way we talk to them, if they do something wrong, reassure them they've made a mistake. And they're, you know, you're smart enough where you don't need to do that again. Instead of telling them that they're bad. Because as we said last time, if we label a child as bad or lazy or no account, then what are they going to become? Bad and lazy and no account. Because that's how they get attention. Children crave attention. Another thing that we can do as individuals, if we've got children or grandchildren around, or perhaps as community members, or as an individual who knows someone that has children, etc., is spend time every day, set aside a time for to talk quietly, calmly, TV off, all that kind of stuff, and ask, let them talk about what they want to talk about, what the child wants to talk about. That reinforces their importance. And we can also listen to any concerns that the child might have. Child abuse. Be aware. Be alert to the signs of child abuse. Child abuse is but one form of violence against children and adolescents. There are all kinds of other forms of violence that take place. According to current statistics, violence against children and adolescents and violence by children and adolescents is at such epidemic proportions that the CDC has labeled it an epidemic that needs to be addressed. You know, when we think of the CDC, we think of polio and HIV and other kinds of diseases. It's such epidemic proportions that the CDC has labeled it such. In 1992, and this I think is mentioned in your book, in 1992, the homicide rate was 6 times greater than the growth in population in the United States. Children are beaten, raped, and robbed more than 5 times more often than adults, 35 and older. In 2009, nearly 5,500 children ages 10 through 24 were murdered. 15 per day in 2009 in the United States. And the CDC has labeled youth violence the second leading cause for death in this age group of ages 10 to 24. A boy who witnesses a father's domestic violence is 10 times more likely to engage in domestic violence than one who doesn't. South Carolina ranks 7th in the country currently for men who murder women. And much of that is domestic. Juveniles currently make up 10% of the population, but also 20 in the U.S., but 23% of all violent crime victims are juveniles. We could go on and on and on. Children who are harmed and neglected show physical signs becoming socially, educationally, emotionally slower. They show signs of anger and hurt, confusion, and even themselves violence and acting out things. The interesting thing is 90% in a survey done in 2009, 90% of Americans surveyed regarded violence and neglect against children as an extremely serious problem. But when asked, if you were confronted with an actual situation, would you report it to the authorities? 33% said yes and 66% said no. Right. And that was the thing. They said they did not want to be involved and didn't want something coming back on them. Currently, there are over 580,000 children in the U.S. foster care system as well. Right. A lot. That's true. Foster parents do oftentimes abuse those children as well. School violence, I don't have to tell you, there's an epidemic in school violence, right? Turn the TV on. And it's not just guns and stabbings. It's other things as well. Bullying. Knives, guns. Sexual assaults on campus in middle schools and high schools occur every day in the United States. In fact, the current estimate is, with the atmosphere of fear, there are over 200,000 students in the U.S. that stay home every day because they're afraid to go to school. And that's a place where we're trying to educate them and send them. Violent toys. Anybody, any guys in here that didn't grow up playing cowboys and Indians or cops and robbers and have guns? I play guns. Well, and some young ladies did as well, right? I was so proud when I was 12 years old. One of the best Christmas gifts I ever got was when my parents finally broke down and bought me a .22 semi-automatic rifle. So now I didn't have to go with my granddaddy hunting. And when it came time to shoot, get his shotgun from him. But I was also taught how to use those kinds of things. Violent toys, violent games. I don't know some of these games. In fact, I was trying to remember, what's a game where people steal cars and beat up folks and all that kind of stuff, the video game? Okay, Grand Theft Auto, thank you. I was trying to think of that, and I just wrote it down. Games where you steal cars and beat up people, because I couldn't remember. Among the most popular video games out there are games like Grand Theft Auto, martial arts games. And my boys used to play, and Stephen, I never could figure it out. Stephen could sit down, he'd sit down for 4 hours and beat whatever the game was a lot of times, and especially the military games. You know, I'm lucky to get past the first two levels, much less get all the way, or I was. I don't play them like that anymore. Although I will say, when I do play video games, it's deer hunting. So, several years ago, well, just a few years ago, right before Christmas, there was a, and I've told you all this before, I think, there was a video game that was out in time for your children for Christmas, and the rapture had happened, and you were left behind, and you were supposed to try and win people over to Jesus by talking to them, and some of them would, and some of them wouldn't, and if you decided you wanted to, you could make them explode in a ball of fire by punching a button. Serves them right. They didn't accept your words, right? What do the studies say after, you know, what do the studies seem to indicate about violent toys, violent video games, those kinds of things? Anybody? Violent toys desensitize children to the dangers and the harm of violent behavior, and violent video games desensitize. Of course, the news desensitizes them if they watch it. Right? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. How many times did Wile E. Coyote get blown up or fall off a cliff? And, yeah. Right. And that's the thing with children. We had it with Wile E. Coyote and all that, but even the others, they get up and they come back, and sometimes children can't process the fact that if I do this to somebody else, they're not going to get up and come back. Right.
But you didn't go out and do it to somebody, you know, with a
oh, yeah.
somebody else, and doing that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just always, it wasn't just Columbine. Columbine didn't start it. There were people who did that beforehand. We just didn't hear a lot about it. But all the copycat kinds of things. Television. We all know there's a strong link between violence and programming on TV. Children who watch more TV are more likely to either be one of two ways, either to act out the violence. What was the kid that was being tried as an adult because he pulled a wrestling move on a cousin, a younger cousin, and killed him? And he said, well, they do it on the TV and they get up. He was like 12 or 13, 14 years old, and the cousin was like 5, 6, something like that. They'll either react that way or become so afraid to go out that they're in counseling. They're in therapy. And we don't even have to talk about how bad gun violence is. Not just in schools, but in other places as well. There was a handout that I didn't give because I wanted to get people here. And you think about other things. When you're a teenager, and teenagers fall into that category, you're a teenager and lo and behold, zing, go the strings of your heart. You fall in love and you start seeing somebody. Well, teenagers. Yeah, okay, I kissed my first girlfriend in kindergarten, but... And I got in trouble in school for kissing the same girl because she came into my classroom and went to sharpen her pencil because pencil sharpening was broken in theirs. And I got in trouble because I jumped up and ran over and kissed her real quick. But you know, teen dating violence is on the rise. And that's what this handout comes from, the South Carolina Coalition Against Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Dating violence is a pattern of behaviors used to exert power and control over a dating partner, with all kinds of potential abuse, physical, emotional, and sexual abuse. Physical abuse. The intentional use of physical force to cause fear or injury, including hitting, punching, slapping, shoving, and kicking. Emotional abuse. Threats. Insults. Constant monitoring. I guess we call that stalking. Intimidation. Isolation. Well, it is stalking. Sexual abuse. Any sexual behavior or contact that is unwanted or interferes. Facts. 1 in 4, according to the CDC. And this is current as of 2011, this handout. 1 in 4 teens report verbal, physical, emotional, sexual violence each year. 25% of teenagers report it. 1 in 11 report being a victim of physical dating violence each year. 1 in 5 report being a victim of emotional abuse, and 1 in 5 high school girls has been physically or sexually abused by a dating partner. Excuse me, this is 2009. I thought it was 11. I got some other stuff that's 2011. South Carolina Department of Education, 16.1% of students surveyed reporting being physically abused by a dating partner, and 8.6% reported being raped by a dating partner. So, what are some things you can do? Left-hand column at the bottom. Best time to talk with your teen is before they start dating. Stephen says Sydney's going to have a long time because she's not going to date until she's 33. Probably not the case. But send consistent messages. Teach your teenagers, male and female, that they deserve respect. They shouldn't be intimidated by others, but they deserve respect. Teach him or her that excessive jealousy, control, and manipulation are not signs of love. but of a disrespectful, potentially dangerous relationship. Be honest. Share your own experiences. Now, it doesn't, once again, like that grandmama said, tell the truth, but you don't always have to be telling all the truth. But talk with them about that. Let them talk. Give them a chance to talk. And let them know that you're not going to scream and holler and jump up and down on their chest if you hear something that you really didn't want to hear from them. You know, that's one of the things about, we keep saying report it. A lot of people don't report, just like the folks that said they wouldn't report the abuse if they were aware of it. Two-thirds of them said they would not because they're afraid of repercussions. They're afraid of what other people will think or do. So, don't interrupt them. Listen to what they're saying, respect their views, and stay calm. If you start getting upset, that's only going to make things worse. And then set a good example yourself to do those kinds of things. What other things can we do? Whether it's teen violence or violence against children, you know, we can't lock up our children, though sometimes we'd like to. A needle and shots, yeah. And that's key. That's key. Building trust. Who can you trust? And the other thing is for us is to make sure that not only do we not react that way, but if, for example, someone doesn't feel that they can talk to their parents, but they come to one of us, we have to be very, very careful about what we agreements we make with them, what we hear, and the other thing that I keep telling folks all the time is, and I used to say just if it's somebody from the opposite sex, but these days, none. You always leave that door cracked and somebody else around. Never alone. Somebody else is at least in another room or another part of the building, and the door is always cracked. And so, yeah, and that's difficult. Counselors, of course, you hope they can trust counselors. But some of the things, if you look at pages 48 and 49 in the book, talks about combating school violence by PTA and having speakers into parent-teacher association groups that can help to teach and do this thing. Teachers, encourage volunteering between folks. And guest speakers on conflict resolution, which can help children, can help adults, but can also help children, especially older children and adolescents, learn how to manage conflict in ways other than walking over and picking up a stick and smacking somebody over the head, or going into the house and bringing a gun to school, or any of that kind of stuff. No.
You can't always trust police, and you can't always trust doctors, and it's hard to try and keep the kids through the trust when you see out there every day that people you're trying to keep them to trust are not always trustworthy.
Well, that's true. They're not always trustworthy because we see all these things. I still can't believe if you ride through above Traveler's Rest that the doctor's sign is still out at the street that's lost his license because of accosting female patients. But I think the key starts there, though, is the number one key is making sure that they can always trust you as a parent, a grandparent, etc. And then, when there are people that you trust, they will trust your judgment in doing so. Until proven wrong, they'll trust your judgment in doing so. Also, unfortunately these days, you have to check folks out. I Googled a few weeks back, or went to the sex offender registry, and within 2 miles of this church, there are several sex offenders, registered sex offenders. That's registered. In one house, there are three that live at the same address. Make you feel really good, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah, well, it is convenient for them, or it might be convenient to keep an eye on them. But, you know, those... Yeah, there is one right at the ballpark. Yeah. Watch what children watch on TV. And watch out for what they watch and how much they watch. Yes, the average teen watches 4 hours of TV a day. Well, and that... Yeah. They need to understand that cartoon characters can get back up, but not others. So another reason how, remove / don't begin putting the TV set in the bedroom, the child's bedroom. And talk about what you watch and images and actions of family life. You know, things that we see on TV and family life now. New. The Cleavers aren't around anymore. And, you know, kids think one of the things that, you know, if the child is sitting there and all of a sudden on this TV show, everybody's laughing at the fact that the child on the TV show is really smarting off at the parents, and the parents don't know what to do, or they smart right back off, and then the child smarts off and leaves the room. That's not appropriate. Talking about why it's not appropriate behavior. Why it's not appropriate in the family to act that way and to treat other people that way. Gun violence. If guns are in the home, keep them locked up, keep them unloaded, and out of reach. Even as a child gets older, if they know their gun's in the home, teach them respect, but always keep them locked up. And don't lock them up and let the child know where the key is either. That's true. That's true. Keep them where they can't get to them. But, you know, we're constantly seeing on the news or reading in the newspapers where accidental shooting. Somebody got hold of a gun and it went off. Accidental shooting. Know the forms of violence against children. Physical, sexual, verbal, and emotional abuse. Abandonment is a form of violence against children. Recognize the signs of violence and don't be afraid to take action. For one of the classes that I teach online, we had to take, every year now, we have to take this sexual abuse and violence thing online and pass a test on it in March. So I did it the other day. Misconduct is for gratification, but is not sexual conduct. Harassment is harassing someone in various ways, which breaks civil laws. Abuse, any sexual act with a minor in any setting, violates both civil and criminal law. Grooming. Watch out for people who spend too much time with your family and your children, especially those who pay attention to your children more than they do the adult, who begin to bring things, buy things, can't even read my own writing, buying things for the children without permission, who want to spend private time with the children, especially adolescents. That is something called grooming. And what they're doing is they're not only grooming the child, they're grooming the parents by winning the parents' trust and doing something. If an adult prefers being around children rather than adults, I mean, almost to the exclusion of adults, that's a major warning sign. Cut them off. Get them away. Unnecessary touching of the child. You know, it's a shame that we have to watch these things in our children. In school system, what can you not do anymore, or people are afraid to do, teachers are afraid to do, that you used to do that made children feel special, and especially if a child was upset? You can't hug them, because somebody might take it the wrong way. But part of the reason that it's that way is because some of those somebodies did do it the wrong way. So be aware of your surroundings and of your children's surroundings, and teach your children to be aware. Recently, and I'll use Sydney again, not this weekend, but when we kept her a few weeks back, and we were... We were somewhere, and she had to go to the potty. And I said, "You want Grand Doc to help you?" She said, "You can stand at the door." I said, "Okay." And so I stood at the door, and she called me a few minutes later. She said, "Grand Doc, I'm done. I'm done." I said, "Okay. Do you need me to come there?" "Uh-huh." So I went in, and I got the toilet paper. She has a little more difficulty wiping certain areas, depending on what it is, than others. And so I said, "Okay, Grand Doc will do." And she looked up at me and she said, "Yes, only my mommy, my daddy, you and Grand Mary, and Grands and Grandpa Bill can wipe me." Yes. Already teaching her. And teaching her well. But make sure that our children know what's appropriate and what's not. And make them feel like, or our grandchildren, make them feel like that if somebody does something, you know, they can come and tell us and we'll at least investigate. A lot of times it doesn't get told because they're afraid nothing will be done, or they're afraid they'll get somebody in trouble. And another thing about people who groom, they tend to threaten the children. They get private time with them. Now, if you tell somebody, they're going to be mad at you, they're going to hate you, or if they really want, I'll come and do such and such to your mommy or your daddy. Yes, grooming is what the coaches did, including the Penn State coach and others. Do not see reporting possible sexual abuse or any other kind of abuse as getting somebody into trouble, but protecting children. Instead of seeing it as, "Oh, I'm going to get them in trouble," or "I'm going to get in trouble for doing it," we're protecting children. We're protecting children. Cybercrime. Victims of cybercrime, children especially in cybercrime, don't consider themselves victims. Teenagers don't consider themselves victims in cybercrime. But one other thing, and I know I've run over a couple of minutes, but I wanted to get to this. There is a group with the a division of the CDC called STRIVE, STRYVE. It's an arm of the CDC, Center for Disease Control, striving to reduce youth violence everywhere. That's what it means. Striving to reduce youth violence everywhere. Its goals are to increase awareness that youth violence can and should be prevented, to promote the use of youth violence prevention approaches that are based on the best available evidence, to provide guidance to communities on how to prevent violence against youth and children. Among the ways that they suggest that we do this as parents and grandparents and others, especially when it comes to abuse and violence: 1, strengthen the personal capacity of youth and children to resist violence by helping them develop social, emotional, and behavioral skills that lead to healthy relationships. That involves teaching, that involves talking, that involves spending time with, you can purchase, not only from this organization, STRIVE, but you can purchase in other places too, in stores. You can purchase books and tapes and other educational toys that will help children and youth to understand what is appropriate and what is not, and what builds good relationships and what signals bad relationships. And it's not too early to start. Sydney's 3.5 years old. Sydney knows only Mommy, Daddy, Granddaughter, Grandmary, Grands, and Grandpa Bill can wipe Sydney when she goes to the bathroom. And those are the only people, although I can't see Grandpa Bill giving her a bath, but those are the only people, he's got bad knees and all this kind of stuff, those are the only people who can give her a bath if she needs a bath. Nobody else. So, helping them develop social, emotional, and behavioral skills that lead to healthy relationships. Secondly, to build and support positive relationships between children, youth, and adults through family, school, and mentoring approaches. Providing positive role models. Positive role models. And then connecting them with positive role models. Pointing out positive role models. These are the positive role models. These are the people you ought to be like. These are people you can trust, etc. Promote safer and more connected communities by designing safety outlets or a safety environment. That could be grandparents on call. That can be an after-school program. That can be just being present and having people that they know they can trust and their parents trust being visible in the community, not just police and others, but people that they know they can trust, as grandparents, friends, being visible, not always being out of sight, out of mind. And create a safer and healthier society through collaboration at all levels, national, state, and local levels. This particular organization, Strive, you can find, I've got that somewhere. You can go to the CDC on the website and look at, there. It's the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control Division of Violence Prevention, and you can click there and you will find STRIVE, STRYVE, if you would like. And yes, Ariel. Right. Destroyed and damaged, like Elizabeth Smart and others. Yeah. Right. Taking advantage of the boys, and it takes, well, and it should, and you know, there's so much cover up and collusion, but it takes one person initially to decide that they're going to stand up regardless of the consequences. Yeah, but they didn't stand up for a long time. Yeah. Wow. Well, oh, it'll stay, and I think that's one of the things, and it's just my opinion, that in 75 cents at the Walmart to get you to drink the drink machine, is we need to put more teeth in those kinds of things.
Yeah.
There are those that do. I think we have to put stronger teeth in the laws. I think we have to educate people more and more to doing that. But until people stand up and say, this is wrong, and I'm going to stand up and point a finger. Yes. Well, and people in high places can fall too, if enough people get there. But once again, people don't want to get involved because they're afraid of the repercussions. And I think what we tell our children when they see this is we try to make them even more careful about those with whom they associate and those kinds of things.
Okay.
Mary?
They
catch teachers. Oh, I know. Mary? Family and family of faith. I saw recently where she was doing speaking engagements. Just got married and she's doing speaking engagements to help. Family and family of faith. Yeah. I wish, and Ariel, those are good questions and they're tough questions. And I wish I had all the answers. My suggestions, once again, are to start young, to continue to pound into the children when you have opportunities. No, I'll not pound into them, but let them know, this is not positive behavior. This is not a good thing. And then it's going to take some people standing up, even to government authorities and saying, look, this isn't right. Something's got to be done. It's when it doesn't come from the top down, where's it got to come from? The grassroots. Well, we do. That's right, Jeff.
We left the other week, we left the liberals get in here that don't want to hear anything about God or church, and we let them run the country and let them take God out of our school.
Well,
then you wonder why kids don't know anything about it.
Well, and I think that we have to be, we have to be careful we don't get to a police state, but I do think that we've allowed too much. People don't speak up. They allow too much other things to go on. Yet Ten Commandments. I understand the Ten Commandments, and obviously in the overall general kind of thing. But what I have been amazed at the last 10 years is all the fight over the Ten Commandments, because that's don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. I'd much rather if you're going to post them or something else, I'd rather post the Beatitudes, which says, do this and treat people this way, etc. But we don't want to do that because it's easier to say, well, if I don't do that, I don't smoke, I don't chew, and I don't go with girls that do, then I'm better off than these other people, instead of, oh, wait a minute, you mean I need to do something, I need to treat people this way, etc. So I do think that we need to look at general morals and moral education. And moral education, not just the school system, it's got to start at home. It's got to start in the churches. It's got
to
be in the community. Right. But.
Yeah, as I said to my kids, kindergarten teacher, you have my permission to.
My daughter, by the time kindergarten this year, this is fifth school that she starts.
Kindergarten.
Unless somebody loving and caring gets hold of them the right way, not very good. We might be seeing him in one of those commercials of this is the face of an abuser as the jail doors slam.
Well, I don't somehow, those of us, including myself, who don't stand up and speak when it's time to do that, are responsible. For same-sex marriage, for homosexuality, all of this, they have they advocate those positions, but we don't advocate opposite.
All it takes for evil to prosper is that good men and women do nothing. And you know, it's, but once again, then people are worried that they'll get labeled this or labeled that. And I do think, you know, Jeff, people, I think you're right. People are afraid to speak up. They don't speak up for whatever reason, but I think a lot of it with the people, Jim, you say most people are probably moral. I would agree overall, but it's that sense of, well, what if I'm wrong, or what if somebody comes after me, or if a child's been abused, that's the thing. You have to speak up.
Anonymously,
yeah. Oh, yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there are folks that if you're in a supermarket, you know, and discipline your child too harshly, there are people that will say something to you about it or look at you. And, I still remember, and there are people that argue that corporal punishment is merely violence that'll be perpetrated later. But I still remember with each of our sons, at least once, using my hand really hard on the bottom to have them turn around and say, "I'm going to report you." I said, "Well, that's okay. Go ahead. But I'm doing it because I love you." And yeah. Well, and there is one little girl that I know that if you raise your voice and speak harshly to her, she'll say, "Oh, my mama."
Her
mother is just, yeah. Well, it is. That's yeah. But you know, and STRIVE is not trying to take over the thing. It is an arm of the CDC that wants to help people connect, and there are other organizations around that do that. But I do think it's important to note that Elizabeth Smart, going back to that, you're right. Elizabeth Smart came back from that and came back strong because of family and family of faith, family. And family of faith. Those were the foundational pillars upon which she rested. And the church, part of our thing is to try and help build families of faith. And yet there are families who claim to be families of faith that turn around and do violence. So it's just, it means that we have to be more diligent in the way we are as individuals, as families, and as connected families within the church and the community. And teaching our children what that kind of love really is about, and that other things are not love and care. and making sure that we know who to tell them, and who we can trust and that they can trust, and make sure that there's enough connection there and they know the people well enough to where they really can trust them. Yeah. Right. False accusation, because there are some that have we know, we see it on the news, and then they come around later and admit that they did this. Yes, choir, go ahead. I've run way over, but I think it's helpful that we do this. But false accusation and what's proper and what's wrong there too. Yeah, and always leave the door cracked. Okay. Well, I thank y'all. We'll pick up in chapter 3 next week. But thank y'all for being here and for sharing your thoughts tonight. I'd just soon hear from y'all as hear myself talk. God bless you. Go in peace. Amen.